Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 40 Backyard Banter with Matt Harmon. And I'm joined by a really good guest today, somebody that I work with at NFL Meet, Rosenthal. You were the boss of around the NFL crew, of not, which really should explain to a lot of people that are listening just what the structure of our job sometimes. So, Greg, anyways, welcome to the podcast.
What is up, Harmon? I'm excited. This is big. This is big. The show right before your birthday, right before the big season finale. This is the spot you want to be.
Yeah, for sure. I know that. Yeah, that's right. By the time this episode comes out, I will have turned 25. Basically, like, my life is more than a quarter of a way over, because there's no way I'm living to 100. There's literally 0% chance. So that's kind of a weird thing to realize. But
you got to be happy during these shows that everyone you listen to, like, they haven't even started in fantasy industry by the time they're 25, or they're doing something completely different. So if nothing else, that should just make you feel better every show that you're way ahead of everyone.
I don't know. I guess maybe that makes me feel, it makes me feel something. I guess I got a lot of time left, I would hope. Jeez, this is a starting off on a weird note, me reflecting on my age. But anyways, no, yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, and this will be for those listening, this will be the second to last episode of season one. But Greg is going to give us some good stuff here tonight, I am sure. Greg, always start the podcast asking the guest, how did you kind of come to fall in love with the game of football, or get the bug for it?
Well, it's funny. I've listened to this show quite a bit. It's a great public service for kids that are thinking about fantasy or people just in the industry. But selfishly for me, for just like keeping in touch with people I know without actually having to talk to them, which is, you know, sometimes difficult. So I've kept in touch. And one of the things it's funny that you hear every time is, or a lot of the times, is like keeping bizarre notebooks when they were young of completely made up sports in their own house. And that was definitely me as a kid. And I was just addicted to sports like a lot of people are, I feel like, where I grew up. And then fantasy, I really got into my freshman year of high school. I had an older friend in high school, and he had cousins that were way older, and they did this thing like called a fantasy auction. And I really had no idea what it was, but I got that old green rotisserie league baseball book, and we showed up at this guy's house on like a random Saturday before the baseball season started and did it for 12, 14 hours. And I was hooked, just like cracking jokes the whole time, you know, and basically was doing fantasy, pretty addicted to that ever since that. The thing I realized in that league was like everyone was that into it. It was so fun. It was a good thing to remember later that I had a really, really hard time winning that league among all these people I knew, but that I eventually did this league called Tout Wars, which still goes now in an NL only league. And I won that the first time I tried, and I never could win my local league. And these were going against all the best people possible. Like Nate Silver was in the league back then, and I didn't really know, but it was a good reminder like how much all the local leagues are incredibly hard and everyone playing is incredibly good, but just how much luck goes into it, which I never ever forget. But to answer your question, I guess on career wise, I really thought I was working out in LA in television production, and I got a job at Fox Sports on the weekend, and I was about 24 years old then, and the light bulb went off at that point. Why am I not just trying to get a career in sports? But until then, it for whatever reason, it just didn't occur to me that you could do that for a living.
So what were you doing before you got into sports?
I went to Tulane, and then I went out to LA, actually here where we both live now, for a couple years, really with no better idea other than I had an internship at this production company that made movies. It had a deal on the Warner Brothers lot, and I got a job as an assistant there after being an intern there, and I was basically a producer's assistant. And then that company kind of went belly up, which tends to happen. And I became a page like Kenneth on 30 Rock. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. I just watched all 40 Rock, like no blue threat during the off season.
The pages are legit in New York, but it's different in Burbank. I got it in Burbank, and you're given tours. That's similar. I was the worst guy giving tours by far in the place. It was so mailed in, and I just tried to get out of there into a real job as soon as I could, and ended up taking a bunch of different production jobs, like production assistant, production helping production coordinators. I ended up working on highlights on the weekends at Fox Sports. And that's, like I said, what kind of put the light bulb off. But I also realized I hated the entertainment industry and I hated being out here. Those are the only people I knew were entertainment people. And I just kind of freaked out and left suddenly. I made the decision. I got a pretty good job and I quit it on my first day and then left a week later because I had this gut feeling it was not for me.
That's really fascinating. So you kind of came from a little bit of the same path as like Alex, Alex Galloway, yeah. my colleague. Like you were in the entertainment industry, but he really loves it. And I think there's like a part of him, whether he would, you know, say it or not, that like kind of misses it, or at least different parts of it. And he said that. I don't think I'm revealing anything that he hasn't said to me. But so like, what was it about the entertainment industry that you just didn't like?
Well, I was just, I was disgusted by everyone I knew was having the same conversations, and everyone, I was living in West Hollywood and everyone was doing the same thing. And tangibly, I was doing pretty well at it for a 24-year-old or whatever. I was going along the path. It was going fine. There's plenty of people doing better and plenty doing worse, but I don't know. Something just seemed wrong to me that just you never met anyone doing anything else. And I realized like, I want to do something that you love doing. And I felt like I had something, like I really wanted to try like my hardest at something. And I just got the feeling this is not what I want to be trying my hardest at. And I just figured I will work in sports. I'm going to move back to the East Coast and I will figure it out when I get there.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, I imagine myself being in the entertainment industry either as Gus, our industry sometimes,
right?
And like question like the I all the time like ask myself, hell, am I doing? Like, am I doing anything meaningful with this career? I watched Spotlight last night,
right?
And after that, I'm like, holy shit. Could you imagine writing something like that? But tomorrow I'm going to write about like why we should believe in Sammy Coates this year or something.
I just wanted something. I didn't even have any high-minded aspirations. It was selfish. I just felt like I wanted to do something that got me going. And I realized it just was not that. And seeing the types of things you had to do to move up, I was basically trying to do the producer track of life, and I just, you just realize quickly that that is a hard one to navigate. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but it just was hard to kind of maintain your sense of self. And you're also young and you're out here in 25 and you go like a little crazy. At least I did. So I got out of there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what was your next step like in terms of getting your first foot in the world of sports writing?
I really lucked into a full-time job at Roto-World not that long after that, about 8 or 9 months later. I bummed around teaching tennis and writing online for rivals.com, writing about UConn basketball. And I had started a baseball blog a few years before that to just get reps. And I was just trying to get a job in sports. And a friend of mine, I had read Roto-World, but I wouldn't say I was a daily user at the time. It was much different back then. But a friend of mine who was diehard Roto-World saw a job listing at Roto-World. And I applied for that, and I think they saw the Fox Sports thing on top of the resume, and they gave me an interview, and I got the job. And it was really their second real full-time writing job there was. They hadn't had a full-time football guy before that. And so I just sort of started doing all their football coverage, and it was basically just me.
Yeah. So for listeners of your podcast, the Around the NFL podcast, obviously if you don't listen to that, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you. You definitely should check it out, subscribe and everything of that nature. Like, I've listened to that podcast for years. So this is where your co-host Dan, or your host Dan Hansis, would interject that this is where you helped build Roto World brick by brick. True or false, Greg?
No, that is nonsense. Matthew Poliat, who I'm glad I got a lot of love on Matthew Berry's podcast and on Silva, Evan Silva, and Pat Daugherty, he really did build it brick by brick on the writing side of things. I mean, he was doing every sport. He sort of established the template. But I was the first one to do, you know, full-time football. I kind of realized, oh, no one's going to tell me exactly what to do. I just needed to do it. And there were a lot of people, obviously, behind the scenes, the owners of the company, and a million other things. Roto World was only a part of the fantasy company that was called All Star Stats, which was a stats service. One thing I thought of, like, with this show was, I remember my interview there was not a great interview. I didn't feel like it was a great interview. And I was told afterwards that they didn't really love me from the interview. And I drove home from New York to Massachusetts that night, and I had that feeling, and I freaked it out because I knew it was an unbelievable opportunity. And I stayed up that night, and I, like, basically wrote down all the things that I had wished I had said, and came up with my plan for the year, like a content plan of everything we were going to do. Here's what we're going to do the second week of August. You know, here's what we're going to do in December, X, Y, and Z with the magazine. And I sent that to them, you know, overnight that night. And and a boss of mine, Rick Wolf, said once they saw that, they said, well, we got to hire this kid now. We weren't going to before, the interview was bad, which was a good lesson for me.
Yeah, that is pretty key. Like, having a plan to what are you going to do with this job before you even get it is super important. You know, I've definitely been asked that, whether it was the NFL.com job or other positions not related to sports writing. They've said, like, well, when you get the job, what are you going to do? And if you don't have a good answer for that, or even, you know, you weren't even asked and you still do it, you still did it. That's a pretty important thing for.
Right. And I'm sure they did ask me in some way, but I didn't say it, or I hadn't thought about it on the right level. And it wasn't even so much my plan, I'm sure, that was any good. It's more, you know, you've been on both sides of it now. It's more just showing the people the enthusiasm and that you have, and the love that you have for the job that you're about to get, or the sport. And I think, you know, that comes across when you do that sort of effort. I think people sometimes are just, they're almost afraid a little bit to try to show too much effort or try too hard. But, like, being on the other side of it, believe me, that's what gets noticed, and that's what people want to see.
Yeah, I think we've tried throughout the series of this podcast to impress upon people that it's hard to be too annoying. I mean, it's certainly possible, but it's hard to, like, for your eagerness, especially in chasing a job, and, you know, a job for many people that it is like a dream. It's hard for that to come off as a bad thing, you know. Like,
I doubt it's possible to be too annoying. Like, I think back, and this makes sense, I think back to when I wrote at Pro Football Talk, and different writers essentially send them links, almost pitching their links for PFT to link to. And the people that sent the most links and were the most annoying, and this is when they were starting out in the business, are all the people that you see on national television now as the main insiders and things like that. It's like there's a reason they got there. It was just because they bugged the crap out of everyone, basically, until everyone knew them.
Yeah, we'll definitely touch on another story that cites you know, bugging the crap out of somebody, but we'll get to that one in a minute. But so, starting out at Roto World, Greg, like, I guess you started out just like everybody else seems to when they come on this podcast or in any other. They say, like, it starts with the blurbing, right? Or was that different for you?
Oh, no, that was, I mean, there really wasn't a job template in any way. I kind of realized after a week or two, oh, no one's going to tell me what to do. My job is just to figure this out and decide what our coverage is going to be. So, yeah, I did the blurbs. I basically, we basically did all the blurbs. That was my job. I also helped with the magazines. You know, we did a football magazine and baseball magazine. I got out of the baseball business pretty quickly because I just realized you're so much better.
Baseball sucks.
Well, that too. See, now I think it's sad. Like, baseball used to be, I used to love baseball, basketball, and football pretty closely. But baseball, for a while, was my favorite. College basketball was in there. And now, like, I barely pay attention to it. I'm kind of back in on the Red Sox this year, but that's been the first time in 3 years. It's sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I always explain it like I just can't possibly give any attention to any other sport like in a meaningful way, or else I'll like disintegrate as a balanced person. And it might not be right.
That's where I'm at now. I have two kids and I'm married, and just those other sports had to fall away. And plus, my love and my time for football takes up all my time. It just feels like any time I'm spending on another sport, why don't I just spend that on football? Anyways, I like football more. It's my favorite sport by far now that it's my job, and it's going to be more useful. But to circle back, answer your thing on Roto-World, you know, it was just a situation you had to, it evolved. You know, there wasn't a lot of team sites. There wasn't a lot of blogs. You know, the main thing was setting up a system of reading every newspaper when I woke up every day. I spent the first 3-4 hours of the day reading every newspaper link in the country and then just putting up blurbs. And then the day would be looking for anything else that happened. And when I first started, which was 2003, not a lot happened the rest of the day. Like, big stories would happen, but there wasn't as much of the RSS feeds. And then, of course, Twitter came later. Team sites were starting to give good information, but not a ton. Adam Schefter on Total Access was something I would just, you know, have to watched every night, and he would usually have three things that would immediately be a blurb. Like, that doesn't really happen as much now because the world moves too fast, but he would come on the air and I knew he would have a handful of things for me to write. So I would have to time, I was living in New York City, I would have to time my train trips from work. If I went up to work, I usually went once or twice a week, you know, I'd have to time them so I wasn't on the train during Total Access. And if some crazy big story happened while I was on the train, like, it just didn't get put on Roto-World until I got back home usually.
Yeah, I love like thinking back to the beginnings of stuff like that, and like how some of it must be like a good, there might be, I mean, I guess like all progress is inherently pretty good in our industry, but the differences between like scouring the newspapers earlier and now, like what people just have to pop on Twitter and there's probably like five things you can blurb about, whether they mean shit or not is a whole nother discussion, but it's definitely a huge change.
Yeah, I still try to read the paper. I'm trying to do more now, especially now I'm out of this boss role a little bit and I have hopefully a little more time. Like, I still try to read the papers because you do get a different sense of the league that way, but you're not, there's not going to be the breaking news and stuff as much. I remember when Twitter started taking off, I made it a rule quickly by then, that's 2009, we had a bunch of writers. I made it a rule. Everyone had to sign up for Twitter. And I remember, you know, a few of the guys were like, no, I don't want to do this. We don't want to do this. I'm like, just trust me. This is like, it became so much a part of our job so quickly. It's incredible.
Yeah, seriously. Well, I mean, for me, I always say, like, I wouldn't even have a career if it wasn't for Twitter. I definitely would not be doing this. That's a weird thing to think about. But so, Greg, obviously, eventually, like, you kind of grew into like a leadership role there at Roto-World. What transition? What, like, as you're building it brick by brick? I can't pull that joke off nearly as well as Hansus can, but I'm not like a humor. I'm not as funny of a person.
Yeah, you got to play it straight. Can't laugh right afterwards.
Yeah, I can't do that. I laugh at my own jokes so bad. It's not a redeeming quality, but that's a whole nother discussion. So as you're kind of growing into this like leadership role, what was that transition like?
Well, NBC came, you know, there were some dicey moments where Roto-World, you know, I found out later, and the company were, you know, not necessarily gonna make it long term. I mean, I didn't know that. I wasn't getting paid much, but I had a full time job with benefits, which at that time there probably were. I always kept it in mind. There was only a handful of people, I think in the country at the time, getting paid full time to write about fantasy. I was just trying to make it the best news site there was. I realized what a great resource it was, and that there was no one else in the space quite like it. And I saw the traffic we were getting, and it was growing. And I mean, RotoWorld's, it started growing into a juggernaut. And I just realized how many beat writers and national writers and stuff were reaching out to me, because they read RotoWorld, and that helped me realize we had something. And I was always in the day to day, just grinding it out, trying to make it the best news possible, to beat everyone at everything, you know, to be the fastest and the most complete at everything, and have a news sense, and just figure it out as we went, and grow our magazine, and let the people that are smarter than me kind of do the business side of things. And eventually, they sold it. They sold the company to NBC, that RotoWorld, that people started realizing content is valuable, and RotoWorld, which at one point was kind of a small part of this fantasy company, ended up being the company, and NBC paid those guys a good bit of money, and we all went over to Stamford, Connecticut, except for the owners, who went off into the sunset.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a get right there to get picked up by NBC. So I think one of the stories that's obviously come out from Evan Silva's episode was like his pestering you essentially into a job.
Yeah.
What kind of give the other side of that story now that Evan's already, told it from his perspective, like what, and I know you and I have talked about this previously off the air as well. So what was that like from your end?
Yeah, if anything, he underplayed it. I mean, he just would send me stuff nonstop. There were some people like him, but not as persistent. He would just send me stuff all the time. He would send me sample blurbs, and I guess they didn't really get me that excited. I don't really remember, but I just gave him a while, and it was a brutal business. I kind of think back to how I did things, and some of it was necessary, but it was brutal. We would just try. It was not easy to find people that were good at blurbing, and you could never predict who was going to be good or not. It wasn't about their resume or necessarily their writing skill right off the bat, like in terms of flowery prose. It was very hard to predict. So we would just try a lot of people. We would just give people a ton of practice shifts, and if they stuck, great. And if not, just we wouldn't let them work anymore. And then some people would build up, okay, you're getting more and more shifts. And then the more and more shifts you do well at, the better you're going to do. And Silva was just tireless, bugging me. And eventually he got an opportunity. And even then, I don't know. I remember at one point my wife I was frustrated with Evan for some reason. She was like, this, all you ever say is this guy is the hardest worker that you've ever had. Like, don't you dare think of ever, letting this guy get away. And I'm like, you're right. So, I was figuring those things out as a manager too. And you just realize that the people that work the hardest and kind of have this no ego common goal are the people that you want around you. And Evan, there's been a lot of great people that have gone through RotoWorld, but of all the people that worked for me, I mean, he stands apart as just like a tireless, insane individual that makes that site so much better. So I knew that.
Yeah, it's crazy. I respect the hell out of Evan just because he knows so much freaking information.
Mm-hmm.
And just I was listening to a podcast this weekend with him and Warren Sharp, who's also just like another person that just knows so much. Like, and I tweeted out when I blasted out the podcast, I was like, I literally feel like I'm drunk in knowledge right now. Like, you guys just know so much. Like, I know a lot about wide receivers, but that's it. Like, I don't know the other stuff. I'm playing catch up on, but it's insane.
Well, you hit upon something. I think that is, I have such a bad memory. People who know me know this, that I have a memory like a goldfish. So I have like a hard time putting myself in the shoes of where I was, 10 years ago. But what you said struck a chord of something I used to always think and talk about, which was information on Roto-World was king. Just knowing, and that was one of the things we always preached, just know more than everyone, and we're gonna have more to know than any other site. And I think that's what you asked, like, when I realized we might have something. I think it's when I realized, oh, all these beat writers out here, there, like, they know their team really well, but there's not a lot of people out there that have the luxury to just be following football news all day, every day, and know every team inside and out. And, you know, we're not ex players. I don't even have a journalism background, which is not too uncommon. And so you're going to need an advantage in some way. And that is your advantage. If you just know everything inside and out, you're going to stand out. Cause as you see in most of the people on TV, in terms of the ex players and stuff, they don't necessarily know the slot cornerback on the Panthers or not. So that can give you an edge, and that can give you an edge in fantasy too. If people realize, okay, these guys know what they're talking about, they'll trust you and they keep coming back. Cause the other thing we found was just that it was insatiable what people wanted. You could never go too deep. Like, it took us a while to realize people were coming to us for news, not really fantasy news, for both, but it really was more news than fantasy news, because all the defensive players and all the lockout, all the stories that had nothing to do with fantasy would be the biggest stories if those were the biggest stories of the day, like the most clicked players and everything.
Right. And so that kind of hits into my next point that I want to lead us down here. The idea of, like, going from fantasy to not fantasy. And I'll say, I mentioned this on the last podcast with John Moore, that like, I kind of feel like I do fantasy as a means to an end to talk about football, but I definitely do not love fantasy football as much as a lot of people that I work with do. That's for sure. I like it and I enjoy it, but it's not like my thing. My thing is elsewhere, and we'll talk about that on the next episode. But that's a professional tease. I'm trying to get good at this podcasting thing, but we're 42 episodes in, I might as well have something under my belt.
That's a risk. Well, I'll let the listeners decide. The season finale, I'm very excited. It really bends the mind what's going on with the season finale.
Oh, there's a lot going on, but we'll have to save that for next, whenever the hell that episode comes out. But Greg, like that transition from, because obviously you did not stay in fantasy forever. Was that kind of a conscious decision? Like, was fantasy for you kind of a means to an end to talk about football? And what was the eventual transition like?
Yeah, I loved fantasy. Like, I got into it. I love fantasy sports. Like I said, I'd been doing baseball and football for a while by that point, and I love talking about fantasy, and I never got sick of the game. But yeah, like you, I think the main thing was I got a chance to talk about and write about football all day. One day at work, I realized I never want to go back to a real job. I better hold on to this as hard as I can, work as hard as I can, and not give it up. And so whether that was fantasy or reality, I was down with either of it. You know, there were aspects of part of the job with, like, I liked doing like the high stakes leagues back then. The NFFC is one I liked doing. It helped pay for a trip, you know, to see a friend where I eventually met my wife. So that, you know, that was great. But
there you go.
But I got a little burnt out from the, like, I had to be in 11 different, you know, industry leagues or in all that sort of thing. But it never consciously was a decision to get out of fantasy. It basically just came up when NBC came along. They would let me or have me do some straight football stuff in the playoffs. Like, I covered the first game I ever covered in person. This, you know, I should be embarrassed about this, but it was, you know, it was Super Bowl. It was the Super Bowl where the Patriots, you know, went 18-1 and lost the perfect season. I'm a Patriots fan, so that was bittersweet. But they started sending me to playoff games and things like that, and then they ended up getting a partnership with Pro Football Talk a couple years later, and I just sort of came along with the package at some point. And it was initially going to be like half and half PFT and Roto-World, but it was just hard to do that. So I just managed Roto-World and started writing PFT. And it was really just, hey, this other opportunity came up, and I've kind of found in my career every 3 or 4 years, it's a good idea to keep you as excited and engaged as possible. If you have a new opportunity, it's something new to try, just try it. So I didn't put too much thought into it. I just decided to go for that.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, so obviously the next step after PFT was landing with the NFL, right? How did that job come about?
They really came to me. I was doing PFT and I loved it. I did that for 3 or 4 years, and that was just, it was a level of intensity that I thought Roto-World was intense, and it was. It was all day, every day for a while, especially when I was younger. But PFT and trying to keep up with Floria was like a whole nother level. And so I did that for 3 or 4 years, and essentially NFL, I think, was looking to possibly get into doing more aggregating, which is basically what I did at PFT under Mike and at Roto-World. And they came to me, and I was under contract at NBC, and I just decided to kind of make the jump. I was terrible during the process of it, and I almost regret how it went, because I was so indecisive. I had a hard time making a decision, but eventually I just decided to go for it because I was afraid of regretting not trying something different.
Also, I'll say this, and like, it's something that I thought before I got the job, and other people have said it to me since I got the job with NFL. Like, the funny thing about like NFL.com is like, really nobody came to NFL for like news or information, really, right? Kind of, I feel like, until you got there. And so I guess you were kind of a part of building that team up as well.
Well, I thought it was a great opportunity. I definitely would take credit for people coming here, but I was confused by a lot of the news coverage at the NFL, because they really just, it wasn't a focus. They had good columnists that would write a couple times a week. Vic Carucci is one, Pat Kerwin was one that used to be there, and different people. Gil Brandt's been there forever. But from news, they just were using wire service. I mean, it was one of the things, from Roto-World's perspective, and then Pro Football Talk, there's a reason those sites get such massive traffic now. It's because they had a head start. I mean, the NFL and some other places weren't covering fantasy or weren't covering the granular news nearly as aggressively as other parts of the internet in 2006, 2008, 2009. By the time I left PFT, it was 2012. I would say even then, as you mentioned, they weren't covering it as aggressively as these quote unquote smaller sites. And those sites were big, building up bigger written traffic than these companies with massive budgets and massive resources, which is crazy. And I think they, they realized they wanted to have original voices and actually have people in house writing their stuff and kind of just figuring out that model. So that's what I tried to do when we came, and Mark and Dan were already here, doing a great job. And I met them here, and then I brought Chris Wessling along and Kevin Patron, Connor Orr, and we just went from there.
So I want to talk about wrestling for a second.
Please. I'm uncomfortable talking about myself, if that's not clear.
Yeah, I'm trying to give you a little break here. I was looking for an avenue there, but we got to it here. So you and Wes are kind of like, in a way, tied at the hip a little bit. Like, obviously you were together at Roto-World, and then he obviously bring him along to NFL.com. Like, what it is, I don't know how to ask this without sounding stupid, but like, what is it about wrestling that you together well?
He's one of the smartest, best football minds out there, and a great writer and a hard worker, and those are I looking at it from a selfish boss perspective, that's everything you want. And when we had a chance to have an open position here, those are hard to find. He just seemed like, such a great candidate to stretch his legs. And I kind of knew he was excited to maybe not do fantasy, to get out of fantasy. I think that was ultimately the biggest attraction that we had, because he loved working at NBC and Roto World too. But man, he's just like, if there's someone I want to listen to talk about football or analyze football, you know, he's the guy. I never even met him in person until we moved out here, which seems crazy. He worked for me for 3 years at Roto World, and I never actually met him, but we were online talking football and arguing and everything all day, every day. And like, I love arguing with Wes. Maybe that's from my upbringing, a bunch of Jews arguing and over the dinner table. And like, he gets, you know, he never backs down. So he was a fun guy to bring along.
No, that's certainly true, that like the not backing down part, that's definitely accurate. But I think that the biggest like success that you guys have probably had has been the podcast. Like, just, I mean, I've listened to you guys, I think, pretty much since the beginning. Like, the original, like,
3 years.
Yeah. Like, because I can definitely remember like listening to it. And I was even on the show as one of the tomato cans that Wes kicks around on the trivia show.
Someone told me that recently, and I didn't know that, man. And then I thought back to it, and I was like, you know what? I do remember you on the podcast, but at the time I didn't know that this guy would be a living legend hosting his own podcast.
Yeah, well, you and me both, pal, so don't worry. Although I do not claim to be a living or a legend. Well, certainly living, I guess. Unless this podcast has come out after, but who knows?
I feel like you're living.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say I'm living well too, but I think it's such a, like, you guys just have a great chemistry, and I think that's the thing that's been so that's lasted so long. But like, it's got to kind of be mind-blowing, like, how big the thing has gotten. Even though you're attached to a big media company, I feel like you guys have almost transcended it in a way.
Well, that's nice of you to say. Like, I try not to think about that sort of thing. Like, it does not surprise me, not to sound overconfident, that it gained an audience, because I just thought the four of us talking, and you know, Dan deserves a lot of credit for a lot of the creative and just the feel behind the show, and Dan and Mark, just the meshing of, I think, our four personalities and talking football. And I felt this at Roto-World and with around, you know, the league and around the NFL writing too. Just, if the hardest part is getting in the door, like, if we just put our heads down and we do this, like, it's going to get better and it's going to be good over the long term. We just got to have people hear it. And that's one of the nice things about, you know, the web and podcast, is hopefully it's, you know, somewhat democratic, that people, I don't know. There wasn't really like a lot out there for podcasts of just guys that you wanted to listen to talk. There's a lot of different types of podcasts, certainly a lot of great fantasy podcasts. But it seemed like there was a hole in the market, especially at the time when we started.
Oh yeah. I can remember when you guys started, like, this was back, 2013. And that was when I was first like out of school and was like, well, I was starting writing, but like, I was also like losing weight too. So I would listen to podcasts in the gym, which I can't do now at this point, but those are the only two podcasts I listened to were your guys's and Football Guys's, the Audible. And right. Now that seems insane, because I'm subscribed to, I feel like, 50 podcasts that I'm never going to be able to listen to all of them.
Right.
So you're right. Like, back then, that was definitely, there was definitely a hole in the market for that, but
right. I'll do things just to give me an excuse to listen to podcasts now. And yeah, it seemed crazy, and I'm a huge believer in podcasts. And I guess that's part of the reason why, like, I hear you, you know, say nice things about the podcast, but I still feel very much like, I don't know, we have a lot more that we want to do. Like, it still feels like the podcasts in general, and certainly the podcasts at the NFL are, you know, they're still kind of the goofy kid in the corner. So yeah. Like, you guys have talked a lot about fantasy gaining a lot of prominence and being such a different industry than it was when I was in it, for instance. I mean, even since 2010 to 2011, it has grown exponentially. And I still feel like podcasts have a long, long way to go. At least I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. And just the popularity of it, like as people kind of realize, I mean, it's something that Evan says all the time, like, you know, just the difference between like with the, what you learn from a podcast over listening to like, you know, sports talk radio or whatever. It's just, it's incredibly stark. And yeah, I'm the same way about podcasts. Like if I'm walking the dog, I'm listening to a podcast. If I'm making dinner, I'm listening to a podcast, washing dishes, anything like that. Charting games, I'm normally listening to a podcast too. Unless I'm listening to like my,
that is, see, I can't even concentrate enough. That's too hard. I listen to music watching games, but I would be too distracted.
Well, because for reception perception, like I'm just tallying things. Like if I'm writing notes or something, I don't know. I probably couldn't do that when I first started, but now that I've been doing that for 3 years, like there's a really instinctive like muscle memory to it, I guess, and just know what I'm looking for, so I can have the noise in the background, I guess. But
well, the thing that in being on the other side of it, and now you know at the NFL, I've kind of been on both sides where I'm in those sort of bossy type meetings, and it's like, you know, what's going to get people's attention is money and traffic or downloads. And that's why fantasy, that was one part that was hard to leave in fantasy, because I knew fantasy is just such a great business that it just forces all these people that really aren't necessarily inclined to make fantasy a big part of their lives. Like, they're going to be forced to because of money, because fantasy makes money and it gets eyeballs. And even now, like it feels like our network certainly is coming around having a couple fantasy shows back to back, but even now I feel like it's underserved fantasy, and most of the progress that it's made is almost begrudgingly from the people that are deciding to do it, just because you're not wired that way. All these people came up for the most, you know, part when fantasy was a very niche industry or it didn't even exist, and it's much different now.
Yeah, I was going to kind of ask you about that. Like, and for one, I would definitely agree that like it's still a little bit of that redheaded stepchild. You know, that, yeah, we'll take it, you know, but now like, well, yeah, we'll take it out for dinners and, you know, parade it around family members because it gets.
Which is just crazy. I mean, it really is crazy because it's driving so much. Not that I need to tell you that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is what it is, but, you know, like I said, I have mixed feelings about the whole fantasy thing anyways.
Wow. But this is like you're on the couch or something. You have mixed feelings about this job that you love. You shouldn't have too mixed feelings.
No. I would just say, like I said, my passion is less about like fantasy football than it, like just straight up fantasy, than it is about like evaluating players and like,
right,
following storylines and players I care about. Like, for this is a good example, you know, part of me is like I wrote the article about Tyler Lockett, like, you know, being like my breakout candidate of the year. You know, if you're just a straight up football writer and you say that, and then Tyler Lockett goes out and has, you know, just say like 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns, that looks like a good prediction. But you know, for a fantasy writer, there's like, it's so much of like a bottom line, and I almost just don't care about that bottom line, you know, because for this, that, and the other reason. So that's like something I find frustrating.
Right. No one's going to really remember it if you're not a fantasy writer. And that is one thing I definitely don't miss. And that is something I think if you asked a lot of people that have been in fantasy for a while, that they probably would not miss is just the intensity of feeling on Sundays when either a guy you touted or not does well or not. Yeah. And even if you're me, who's like a little dead inside and will not mind all the tweets coming at me, like whatsoever, like that get really mad. Even then it still pains you, 'cause it just kills you or makes your day, because you just want your picks to do well. It's hard to describe.
No, and I don't mean to sound like not grateful for fantasy, because like I've so far, fingers crossed, like in my career, it's been mostly positive. I'm pretty much tied to the hip with Allen Robinson for the rest of forever, because like I nailed that prediction from like a fantasy sense. So like you know, again, but again, it had Allen Robinson like gone out and had, you know, 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns last year, I would have still felt like I was right. But the fact that he blew up for such big fantasy numbers is why people, you know, love me even more now. That's weird to say, but you know, that's the point. Hopefully
it goes like well. That should be the title of this podcast. Forget putting my name in. It should be Matt Harmon. People love me even more now.
Oh, that's horrible. I'm going to edit this part out. No, I'm not. But yeah, I think that it's just, there's just a difference between like fantasy and, you know, real life football or whatever. But I don't even know. I don't even know if I would find writing about real football as gratifying as I do fantasy. But so sometimes I just say shit without really having any sort of backing to it.
There's pluses and minuses. It's cool. One of the cool things I think about fantasy now that, you know, was not the case in fantasy writing probably 5 years ago is there's just exponentially more intelligent, just different writing that if you really drill down to it, isn't that fantasy oriented like you're talking about. It's more about scouting and process and analytics and strategy and just football. I mean, that's kind of how I always looked. I news is kind of always got me going, like the hamster wheel, as Silva would said, of the news. But that's all football. It's not necessarily right. Fantasy football.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of what I do, I feel like is, you know, yeah, just not like I just never am interested in like the basic, like, all right, here's your starts and here's your sits and here's your sleepers and here's your breakouts and, you know, the canned typical fantasy stuff. But I think that's, you know, that's a part of being in the industry is wanting to make it what you think of it. I'm talking too much about myself. This is not my episode yet. And I'm blaming you, Greg, not me. But so getting back to you a little bit here, kind of winding towards the end of the episode. So I guess one thing like that you've gotten to do a lot of different things, you know, whether it's being a fantasy writer, a news writer, then you were obviously like the boss at ATN and now you're not, but you've also like been on TV a little bit. What has that transition been like to, from being like a typically a writer to then being like a little bit more of a television personality?
Well, I'm definitely not that yet. Although, you know, that's one of the reasons I backed off of being, you know, the boss of, you know, being the around the NFL like leader was I wanted to do that more. I wanted to write more. I wanted to be in meetings way less and like do, you know, get back sort of to the things of like what you love about what got you into this in the first place. And TV is definitely part of that because I have a good time doing it. And I look at it like, you know, I want to be really well prepared. Like I'm going to be confident in the things that I want to say. And I, you know, I don't know. They're letting me do it a little bit, so I should take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But you got to sort of open up the time to do it because it is a real job that you know that hopefully I'm going to take a little, you know, more time to try to be good at. But it's been a long transition. I mean, they put me on NBC on TV at NBC Sports Network doing fantasy, so I had some experience doing that. And, you know, we were doing a live fantasy, you know, show and tape shows on NBCSports.com going as far back as like 2007, 2008. We did this show Fantasy Fix Live, which that was another, you know, eye opener to that. You could get like a monster audience of people just watching you do start sits like online in 2008. Cause there really just wasn't that much out there like that. So, I don't know if that answers your question a lot. I think it took me a while to, like, I thought I liked it and I thought I was comfortable at it, but I don't think I really, like, enjoyed it until recently. And I guess that probably just comes from reps and confidence or whatever. I don't know what it was. Like, I always felt like I was almost cheating my actual job, which was writing and doing news, and like, and the TV side of thing was just a nice little extra thing on top of it, but they're not paying me for that.
Right. It's almost like, hey, you get to do this. You don't need any more extra money for that. You don't need any more extra money for that. It's a lot more. There is a lot more of that in the industry that I think people people realize. Hey, you get to do this. We don't need to pay you more for that.
That's a lot of the industry is sticking around and just doing tons of extra things. I mean, if there's a lesson I got at Rotoworld, that was it. Was just start doing the things you wanted to do. Like, no one really asked me on some level to do some of the boss type of editor stuff or necessarily the online video stuff. I was trying to think of ways in an industry where there weren't a lot of people doing it to add value to me so that they wouldn't get rid of me. Cause there were times when, you know, fantasy was always doing well, but there were times when I've definitely been at places where they have been making like big time cuts. So you just are thinking of like, what can I do that they just would not want to replace me? And just the more you can do. And now, you know, TV is definitely part of that now. The better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that just being multiple in multi skill set is incredibly important.
Well, plus you watch it and like, don't you? I don't know. There is part of me that is like that is screaming at the television half of the time and wanting to be that voice a little bit, saying the things that people scream at the television, because there are just not a lot of. There are almost no ex-player, you know, non-ex-player, non-ex-GM people analyzing TV that aren't like insiders. Like, I don't want to be an insider. Oh. I don't want to be Ian Rappaport or anything. I just want to watch football and kind of tell you what I think and the depth charts and all that sort of stuff. And that doesn't really exist too much. So it's exciting to try to make that exist a little bit.
No, I mean, hell yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than like even just watching like our network or even watching our fantasy show and like the other guys on there, like, no, that's so incorrect. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And trying to just get to the point of, you know, that you'll get it, that you're just around long enough that they need someone to fill in here or there. And you just get a couple swings at the plate or whatever, and then hopefully you stick.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it is what it is. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, that's when you have that feeling, that's like when you know you're onto something. Like, when you're listening to a podcast or watching TV and you're like, no, I you know, whether you do or not, like, I know better than what this person's saying. Like, I can offer a better or even just a different perspective, for God's sakes. Like, I think that's the one thing that media types seem to run from, is like the different perspective other than just like, oh yeah, this is an ex player, you know, they've played before. Like, you know, I come back to it on the show all the time. Like, it's football, man. You know, not reading like hieroglyphics off the pyramid wall. Like, you know, there's a perspective that players can speak to that, Greg, that you and I could never in a thousand years,
of course,
touch on.
Like, I always think, you know, like, the ex player, especially someone that's worked for a team, which is sometimes happened, that actually does all the homework in the world possible. Like, you can't beat that guy, but you're not trying to beat that guy. And there aren't many of those guys. You're trying to, like you said, have a different perspective than all the other people who you've been watching at home and be like, they don't really follow the sport as much. And it's just having some confidence in backing up your arguments. Obviously, you know that you're going to be wrong some of the times, but it doesn't mean you can't have a good argument or you don't believe in what you say.
Yeah, having confidence in what you say and just somehow earning that confidence is important. I don't know when that comes, but it does come. So Greg, like, kind of just a last couple of questions here. Sure. If you had just like one overarching theme, you know, obviously, like, you, I definitely like it, you know, and then it's not weird to say because we like know each other, but, you know, I've looked up to you in the industry for like a long time and I respect a lot of what you've been able to do. Like, so if you had one kind of overarching piece of advice, like, to give to an aspiring writer, what would like the one thing you would say is?
Oh, one thing. Gosh, it's so cliche. to keep at it and have patience. But I think some of the best people that I've seen that it didn't work out for, that was sometimes their bugaboo or the thing that they came across that didn't work. I mean, think about some of the guys that you've had on your podcast, like how long it took them to get to where they are. And I think sometimes people, they get frustrated with what they see as unfair hiring or not getting the opportunities or not getting paid or not, you know, enough or this or that, like, and they should, like, it is all unfair. Like, but I think the sooner you realize that and just sort of accept that and find what you love about the job and kind of keep, hold on to that love, and show it to, you know, show it to the readers and the listeners and everything, like have it come across in your work, then you'll be better. You'll do well in the long run. But sometimes it's hard to tell people when they're at certain career crossroads or life crossroads to just keep going, like stick to it because you love it. Because sometimes it's just a little bit of a blind faith in yourself and some sort of process that eventually it'll work out. Because if you have your foot in the door, that, you know, that's the hardest part, is getting your foot in the door. And if you don't have your foot in the door, it's just working at what you do instead of being so worried about the opportunity, if that makes sense. That was winding. I don't know if that was one piece of advice.
Well, it counts. If you said it all without me interrupting, that counts as one piece of advice. No, but it's so true. Like, and those crossroads that you get at, that like leads you to where you should be. So if this is not the thing for you and you find yourself in those crossroads and you decide it's not, like, that's cool too. You know, right. And I think there's been a few episodes on this podcast with people that didn't, you know, quote unquote, didn't make it, and but they're in perfectly good places as a result.
Right. I think on some level you'll know. Like, if you feel like you almost don't have a choice, then you're probably, like, if you don't have a choice and that you just love it and you're just going to have to make it work or else, then that's kind of what you want.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's a really good point. So, Greg, like, what's something you see in the industry, whether it's like on Twitter or maybe from more of a grand view perspective, that you see that you don't really like?
I should be more prepared. I've listened to these enough.
Yeah, now we're getting into the really staged questions. So you should.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go with more of a fantasy thing. Now I might be wrong on this. There's probably a happy medium between what my policy used to be when I worked in fantasy and what makes sense now. I used to have a policy, and I would encourage our writers to do this too. I used to have a policy, don't read other fantasy writing, which I don't think necessarily would make sense now, because I think there's so much more going on. But especially as someone that did the projections and did the rankings and was really into that, like, I loved that stuff. That was some of my favorite part of the job, is nerding out on doing the projections for the magazine and spending a month on that, all that sort of stuff. Like, I just got it in my head that I didn't want to know what anyone else was doing, because that was the only way that you could possibly have, like, your own original thoughts of who is going to be good this year and who is going to be bad. Because I think especially back then, it felt like there was like an echo chamber of where everyone just started, like, some sort of consensus of what fantasy football is going to be for the year forms at some point. And I think that's a little dangerous, or not dangerous, but I think it'd be advantageous to be outside of that consensus. I think you do a good job with it. Just I eyeballed your rankings, and it's not like I went through it one by one and compared to average draft position, but I think if you go, you got to trust in your own sort of evaluation. And if you're a writer, or a website, like, I think it's a big advantage to almost ignore what everyone else is saying and just have your own your own takes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's hard because the fantasy's become so much of like a communal thing, and like right. it's hard to like completely tune everybody out. But
right. I would say, I think it'd be impossible in the Twitter age. Like I started fading out from doing fantasy every day basically soon after Twitter started. And not to mention there's people like you and a million, and not a million, but a lot of other writers, I think, writing about fantasy football on really intelligently and in a bigger way than there was back when I was doing it. I always just figured the writers I need to read are the straight NFL writers. That'll give me all the information I need to make my own sort of decisions.
Yeah, but I think the heart of your point is good. You know, like the don't be affected by groupthink and don't
right.
don't like follow things blindly. Like you guys were talking about that on one of your ATN episodes recently, like Wessling said, who I feel definitely takes no harm in taking shots at fantasy sometimes. which is
fun. That, it was like that when he was in fantasy too, though. So you know, it was no different.
I imagine that there's not a lot, you know, that Wessling is Wessling, and that's a, you know, that's a good thing. He's a beautiful human being. But I think that, you know, he was saying obviously like with Tevin Coleman taking touches from Devonta Freeman, like he's like, you know, fantasy is a very groupthink thing, and now everybody's freaking out about this one thing. And, you know, that's a good point about being like, okay, just because everybody else is freaking out about this doesn't mean I then have to freak out about it, and staying true to your process and everything like that, I think is very important advice. Like just if the one, like I've talked about this recently, like it bothers me that like, you know, early, like in MFL 10s or whatever, like really just the plugged in drafters, like every time I'd put a reception perception article, the ADP would shift because of whatever I said. Yeah. And that's like something I'm like, please don't do that. Like, don't just follow me blindly just because I said something.
Right. Well, it's wild now to think, cause I've heard other RotoWorld guys talk about that some of these RotoWorld posts that could or could not exist very easily if the writer chose not to write it or didn't find it that day, like really impacts value for a couple months over the off season, just because he happened to pick up yeah. one, you know, half line about, I don't know, you know, Tajay Sharp or something like that. That's not even a good example because he's actually seemingly locked in. But something like Devontae Adams looks good or looks bad this offseason, because you'll get, you know, 10 different people that are actually there that disagree on that thing. I don't trust their opinion anyways.
Right, sure. Yeah, those Green Bay team writers seem to not know. They're not on message.
How dare you. Actually, you know, if, for what it's worth, Green Bay, that's, if nothing else, they probably have the best local coverage. The problem is it's almost so good that you have 8 pretty smart people writing about it, and you have, you know, they all have.
Oh, no, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's, I'm not saying that like as a shot. I kind of am like jokingly making like a political party joke there. Like when, you know, I say like, you need to be on message. This candidate needs to be on message, you know, or whatever. Like, right. I'm kidding. And like, yeah, it's 8 like very smart people that have like different opinions. And I'm just being facetious when I'm like, when I say they're not on message. So it's not a shot at me. I'm not taking a shot at
you. I get it. You basically just crapped on all Green Bay reporters and the Packers organization.
Well, I do take plenty of unsolicited pot shots at the Packers now that I live with Gelhar. So maybe that was just like an instinct there.
You're right. That one piece of advice that only has so, or one annoyance only has so much, because you're right about the community part. That's where like the dead inside thing might come back around. Because I guess I never felt like a huge part of some fantasy community. I always remember, like, you know, there's the conventions or whatever, and I always thought, isn't that why we're in the fantasy, you know, community, like business, to not have to go to work conventions or things? But people, but I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there, you know, it is what it is. But so, Greg, final question to you, and if you've listened to the podcast, like I know you have, you know that this is the last part that comes, and everybody seems to hate it, but I still do it anyways because, after all, it is my show. So I always give the guests one last shot at the floor before I yank it out from under you. So, Greg, before we get out of here, the floor is yours.
Oh, man. I think I've droned on about anything that could have possibly taken up this spot. Can I just wish you a happy birthday? Does that count?
Sure. Sure. Even though, again, this will come out like 2 days or 3 days after my birthday, but, you know, whatever.
Well, I'll give you a happy birthday. I mean, I do think, what do I got? I think sometimes here I do have, I do it maybe it's an extension of what we were talking about, but I do think sometimes people trying to get into the industry or that are in it are often worried about like what is going to be a good move for their career. And a lot of the people that end up having the best careers are not necessarily thinking that way. They're just kind of following what they think is good, like what they think is good content, instead of trying to think what other people would think is good content and strategize. You know what I mean? That comes across when you're just doing what you genuinely think is the best idea, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And that's a really good point that I can relate to. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to. Yeah. Just don't try to do what you think people want you to do. Just do your thing and just do it. And if it's meant to be, it'll be. And that's like a really stupid, corny way of saying things, but it's very true. I feel like the most successful people in the writing community in general are just, they just stick true to what the voice inside themselves is telling them.
Like, as someone that hired a lot in the fantasy industry, and then I guess, you know, less so, but somewhat outside of it, like so many people are that were trying to get jobs were so concerned about getting the job and brand, and I don't know if branding's the right word, but sort of marketing themselves and getting their stuff out there and this or that, instead of just being focused on their work. Cause you almost always are not as good as you think you are. Like, the people that were more focused on just that knew that they weren't good. It took me 4 or 5 years to realize how little I knew about football. Like, that was sort of that was one of the first big aha moments. Like, wow, man, like the more I learn football, the more I realize I don't know anything. Like the people that are just working on trying to get better, they're the ones that ended up getting those jobs in the end, not the ones that were always just pushing to get in front of decision makers probably too early.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that's a good point to close on. Well, Greg, I really thank you for coming on tonight. This has been good. I've wanted to have you on for a long time since I knew you listened to the podcast. So it's been a good chat. Thanks again for coming on, and for everybody that's been listening, thanks again for tuning in to the second to last episode of season one. It's a bittersweet sort of ending to the podcast. Whoa. For me here. Yeah. Now that the NFL, I can already feel like the attention, both from myself and the audience, like being like, okay, yeah, well, football's back. So, you know, but yeah, but it's been great. And this has been this podcast seriously has been a hell of a lot of fun, but we'll talk more about that on the next episode. So for Greg, for everyone out there, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you learned something.